building block of the church, which we consider to be marriages and parenting. We had a bunch of sessions on that. And then we started last week talking about the dynamics that exist among churches when it comes to managing conflict and struggles from within. And I'm trying to introduce you and sort of ease you into something that I really wish that those people that are the great thinkers in this particular regard would come up with a different name. Because the name of it is, I think, really almost incredibly off-putting. But because I want to talk this morning about systems theory. Now, did anybody ever just get, you know, excited inside about systems theory? It's actually a terrible name for a very profound concept. So if you could just, I don't know, just set aside your antipathy towards, goofy sounding names. Hopefully we'll have something that we can dive into when it comes to this morning. So I want to start as simply as I can with a very simple illustration of a children's mobile. Y'all remember these? Maybe you've got small children, you're still using these things, but these are these little effective things that hang over your child's crib, right? Or maybe in a corner of a room, that actually will sit and maybe they'll turn a little bit. The child can sort of bat at it if they want to. The interesting feature, though, about a mobile is the interconnected relationships of all of the elements hanging from the mobile to each other, okay? So think about this. If I lean over and my child reaches for that little elephant on the left side of the picture and yanks down on it, it will not just be the elephant that is affected by the child's actions, correct? It will also be the poor zebra on the right side of the mobile. Elephant goes down, zebra will go up. Why? Because of the nature of the mobile, we see the interconnectedness of the relationships of the people there. That one individual's actions invariably affect the other people in the midst of it. Okay? Well, that is a wonderful illustration for what began sometime around the 1970s and 1980s in popular psychology. And I don't mean pop psychology, like the sort of books. But there was a realm of thinking among psychologists who were pushing back against what we might refer to as a purely individualist model of counseling. That is, for most of us, I think when we hear about therapy or counseling, we imagine being in a room, maybe we're laid out on a couch or something, and there's this depth psychologist being like, tell me about your childhood. And we're trying to delve into the inner recesses of your mind and find out exactly what motivates you. Well, I hope you heard me say last week that that is not an unimportant topic. There are many of us who can go our entire lives with unresolved conflicts and issues, dare we use the word triggers, that we have embraced from our past, that we inherited from our families of origin, or that we inherited from some of the contexts in which I was raised, which are still affecting me. In other words, systems theory is not trying to reject a purely individualist model. They're simply saying there's more, okay? And one of the things that it does is it recognizes that people function in groups. We clump together. We form associations with one another. We create bodies. And whenever that association, the more that that association becomes tight, becomes known amongst itself, the more the experiences of one individual affects the whole. Just like a mobile. You follow me? When something happens to you, it invariably sends reverberations through the entirety of this particular association. That's all systems theory is examining how these relationships sort of move through things, right? Everyone's connected, oftentimes in a very delicate connection. Always looking for this, okay? So here's what I want you to look at as far as an example. Let's imagine for a moment that there is Church A, and something has happened that particular day. Let's say, purely hypothetically, that it was a Tuesday evening. And on that Tuesday evening, there was a line of thunderstorms that moved through the Oxford area. And let's just say, also hypothetically, that there was lightning in all of these storms that struck your church, all right? so that by the time Wednesday morning comes around, you have two pastors who walk into their church on this Wednesday morning only to find what's going on. Well, the first thing that happens is there's a phone call from the women's ministry director who has women's Bible study starting at 9 o'clock that morning, and yet there's an alarm going off. And she can't, it won't shut off. She presses as many buttons as she can press, but she can't seem to get it off. She calls around frantically trying to find someone to help. We also discover that there is a pile of water, let's again, hypothetically, sitting right over here in one of the aisles that apparently is coming down from some flashing that was misplaced, or at least the building settling in the midst of some flashing. And then again, hypothetically, let's just say that your worship arts director comes in and suddenly discovers that while most things can turn on after the lightning storm the night before, the one thing that won't turn on is the sequencer that turns the PA on. So, and let's also say, hypothetically, of course, that you've got a funeral that you're going to host on that next Saturday, just 3 days later, where you're going to have probably 500 to 600 community leaders coming here for Dr. Leroy Wadlington, hypothetically's funeral, for here, and now we don't have a PA. All right, so here's what I'm saying. A simple storm coming through can create chaos, can it not? And here's the thing. The reason why that's a great illustration is because it was an act of God. It's something that we can't control. No one did something wrong on Tuesday night. It's just what happens. But let's imagine hypothetically that the first thing that happens is, in church A, is the pastor walks in and he loses his cool. He yells at his staff to get back to work. He begins to stew over some resentments that he's not resolved with a deacon board that he always feels in constant battles with. His detractors in the church, who actually are nowhere near as large as he thinks they are, take the opportunity to question his leadership abilities. Pretty soon, there's these little small groups and factions in the church that are discussing and panicking about how in the world we're ever going to afford this repair. Could you feel that, right? You would feel those reverberations as they went through. But imagine, on another hand, there's another sort of church B, and I have no idea how I reacted to that this particular week. But in the second church, the pastor sort of gets the phone call, and immediately he begins to laugh to himself because he thinks to himself, man, this job is never dull. He sends out a text to his leadership. He considers friends, or he calls friends and consults with them and coworkers about what the problem is. He shows up in the midst of the problems wherever he can. He doesn't leave people to their own. He discusses with them exactly where they're supposed to go. And what he does is he begins to empower people to solve their own problems. Those are two different reactions, similar churches, similar sizes, similar dynamics within them, and yet totally different outcomes when these acts of God happen. I believe that the reason why those things are as apparent as they are is because of some of the things that we see inherent in systems theory. And this week, and really the next 2 weeks, I want to take a look at exactly what we mean by this concept that maybe we can garner some wisdom from. And my hope is of about the, 100 or so plus people in this room, there'll be that many people who can actually go out and be people that actually keep systems calm rather than upset them. Okay? So a couple of questions here as we go in. First of all, I want to look, first of all, at relationships in the system. I've already told you how much time I spend finding graphics. This is a pure gold graphic right here because it actually perfectly illustrates systems theory, right? In other words, all of those gears work together. They're all affecting one another. And you have individuals in there that are pushing and pulling against those particular gears to help us understand what these relationships within the systems within the system means. You know what? I'm going to back up just a little bit. But what we mean by systems theory is simply each person as an individual in a larger system that are more powerful than the sum total of their membership. That is, every person in the system influences and is influenced by others in the system. And by the way, each of us in lots of contexts exist in different systems, right? Gentlemen, my assumption is you have a work system. There's a system of relationships that exist there. Some of those may be volatile, some of those may be calm. We also come to church and we have a system of relationships here. Maybe perhaps you have extended family. You walk home and you see that there's relationships between family members. The way those things lay out and our relationships move between each other is what systems theory is trying to focus on. Yeah, so the question is, are we able in the midst of these particular differences in systems to engage well with each other? What does it mean for me to be someone who is not going to be a conduit for the difficulty that's going on, but actually an absorption of the difficulty? That's really the question. And systems theory focuses on this idea that certain individuals, for reasons that we'll get to probably next week more than this week, certain individuals are really good at taking on anxiety and giving it away to someone else. I'm going to define anxiety very specifically in a moment, by the way. They are conduits. It moves through the system very quickly with certain individuals. However, there are other individuals with whom once that anxiety hits them, they're able to absorb it, and the buck stops with them. And invariably, just like the mobile, when you get stability in one part of the system, it creates stability in the rest of the system, right? All relationships are working this particular way. And so relationships are the key thing to understanding how they do, because we develop our identity in relationship with other people. In other words, part of what it means for you to be who you are is a result of the people that you know who have influenced you directly or indirectly. That's part of your self-worth, your sense of identity, who you are. And for that reason, every church, therefore, is a system of systems. There's this complex collision of individuals and families, and we're all relating to each other. And people develop a way of relating, which you and I call an identity, within the church that often represents the other systems in their lives, and yet in some ways are distinct from them. And so oftentimes what happens is a church will develop a corporate identity. Has anybody ever asked you this question? Hey, what is that church over on the hill over there? Christ something or other. What is that church like? That's a great question. How do you answer that? By that, what they mean is, what is the personality that the church has taken on? They may be talking about worship style. They may be talking about its mission. They may talk about the size of the church or the place on the theological spectrum, to the feel of their community life. But all of those are aspects of a church's personality and are related to the emotional and relational life of the members. Now, that last sentence I just said is the big flashing thing. The feel of a church oftentimes is attached to the emotional and relational life of its members, which is why last week we introduced the topic of saying, hey, there's this iceberg working beneath the surface of us. Are you ready to look at that? Okay? So what makes this kind of tough, though, to get your hands around is that it isn't simply like the animals on the mobile. Because there's so many people attached to it, you begin to see invariably that there are dynamics that rise up in the midst of churches. And what we find is, first of all, that we experience others whether we know that person or not. This is absolutely key to systems theory. The actions of each person send ripples that affect the whole system. For instance, let's say somebody who helps on a local missions team has a great influence to shape the way you're informed about and experiencing serving in our city. You ever thought about that? The person who is in charge of our missions giving has a lot of control, if you will, over letting you see, as John Q. member of Christ Pres, what exactly that's about. That's influential. Or let's imagine there's a seminary professor who taught a pastor to be very insecure about other competing theological systems. Does that make sense? When your pastor then comes to talk to you and he begins to get up and teach, and maybe he's being very defensive and contrarian to other people's beliefs, you're not just interacting with that pastor. Does that make sense? You're also interacting with that pastor's seminary professor, who the pastor has sort of absorbed his influence and begun to communicate themselves. Hey, by the way, small little power tip. One of the best questions you can ask pastors, I've learned, is who are the top three people that have influenced you in your life? Note to self, future search committee people, right? In other words, we always experience others. We experience others through their relationships, through the icebergs that they're carrying around of interconnected relationships. And then secondly, the second dynamic that arises is we experience others, however, in different degrees. There may be people whose actions are frustrating to you, but to other people, it doesn't frustrate them at all. Does that make sense? You may experience an elder as very condescending, while other people experience the same person as very sincere and helpful. What's that about? In other words, oftentimes what you experience is more about who you are than who the other person is. I can't stress this enough. Most times, in most sort of systems of relationships, you'll have a group of people that think a certain thing that happened was perfectly normal and fine. You'll have another group of people that are maybe appalled and horrified that that thing happened. What systems theory is trying to do is to get you to take a pause for a moment and say, what are you bringing to this conversation? You, as an individual. What is the baggage that you have that might incite you to find that particular behavior as offensive as it was? Now, some of you are saying, yeah, but was it offensive or was it not? That's not the question we're having right now, right? The question we're dealing with right now is how am I reacting to that? And is it keeping healthy? Because let's be honest, theological badness happens in churches. Elder boards make bad decisions. It happens. We're not asking about valuing things necessarily. We're saying, how does it affect us as a body? How do those things ripple throughout the system that is our church? So my point is that this system of relationships, it's not a good thing or a bad thing, but they can be relatively more or less healthy. And by healthy, we simply mean that a congregation that is helpful is one that is able to absorb the anxiety as it goes through a system more than they become a conduit for it. Does that make sense? Now look, I'm not an electrician, but I'm about to say something about electricity. And so all those of you who know anything about electricity are going to be like, he has no idea what he's talking about. And you would be absolutely correct. But there's a difference between if a charge of electricity moves across a wire, let us say, if it meets something that will actually conduct that electricity, it'll move straight on to the next section, right? But if you have something, I don't know, like say wood or rubber or something else that actually does not sort of conduct electricity, do wood and rubber conduct electricity? Thank you. No, good. Engineers in the room, a little help here, okay? It stops there. That's what we're asking. A health of a body is to be determined by the number of people, right, that are going through emotional processes like we talked through last week about any number of things, and whether or not we know how to absorb those shocks to the system, or whether we're just passing it along and creating a body that only knows how to relate because we're all anxious. Systems theory refers to that as chronically anxious systems. Some of you live in families just like this, right? The only normal that the family knows is chaos. And when there is no chaos, there's always somebody to be like, oh, cool. You pull the grenade out and toss it in there. Chronically anxious systems are those who have never learned how to actually be absorbers of anxiety rather than conduits of anxiety. That really is the only thing I want you to hear this morning. Am I a conduit or am I an absorber? Which one am I? Oftentimes. Now, I've been using a term that I want to define for us before we move on to next week's lesson. Yeah, because I want to have some time for you to ask questions about this, because this is hard to get the first time you hear it. Okay, keep using this word anxiety. Les, what do you mean by the word anxiety? I have panic attacks. Is that what you're talking about? And the answer is no. That's not what I'm talking about when it comes to systems theory. Panic attacks can be the cause of an emotional process, right, as something that you're going through, but while itself would not necessarily be considered the anxiety in systems theory. Anxiety in system actually happens at any time when the system becomes imbalanced. The little child yanks on the gray elephant on the mobile, and everything starts to get rocked, okay? Lightning strikes the building, and suddenly the lovely system of Les Newsom's Wednesday morning is upset. But so is Anna's, and so is Randall's, and so is whoever else we had to call that morning to sort of get things back online. There's amplification this morning because of the anxiety that was going through the system on Wednesday morning after that hideous storm. Tragedies happen in the family of a church. How about that? Conflict arises between officers and members. Here's one. A change in the worship service is made. Are we going Catholic or what? Is that what we're doing? Or how about this? I don't know, hypothetically, a pastor who's been there for 16 years leaves. This is immediately relevant. You follow me? In other words, all of a sudden, the system gets a shock to the system. And all of a sudden, a change happens. Maybe the church moves into a new building. There's another thought. But whenever something happens, what happens is there will be some people that will experience the happening as a threat to the system. It feels like a threat. Why does it feel like a threat? Because I had something, and now I don't have it. Please understand me. It is experienced as a threat. Because there will always be some people in the system that'll sit on the backside and be kind of like, that's not a big deal. Why are they making such a big deal about this? Doesn't matter. To them, they are anxious about it because they had something and now it's lost. I loved my little church in the skating rink, and now there's all these new people and they're all just pretty, and I don't like any of them. Unless you've never heard anybody say that in this church. No, I've never heard anybody say that in this church. What's happening, though, is we experiencing those things because it may or may not actually be a threat. You've heard the cliche that churches will split over carpet color. Why is it that simple decisions can somehow be escalated into huge matters of importance? The reason why is because we are so deeply and personally committed to the proper color carpet. No, that's not the case. It's because that decision feels threatening. You know, honestly, I just don't like it because whenever that woman gets in charge of the decorations, she just takes over and she exerts her own will. And I just can't stand that. This is what divides churches. Here comes in. She doesn't respect me. I feel unloved. I feel rejected. By the way, this is a huge thing. We almost always experience imbalance as rejection. We can. Not everybody. But there will almost always be someone in there that feels rejected, that feels like nobody heard me. Or this is a bad decision. And it's so bad that I can't be a part of this anymore. Which for a lot of people may be a very calm decision. One of the things that's been difficult about the last 4.5 years, I don't know if it's been difficult, but one thing that's been a reality that I've come to is that not everybody found their home at Christ Pres in the last 4.5 years. Some very dear friends of mine, about 2 months before we moved into this building, left the church to go to 2 other churches in this town that I think are absolutely fantastic and not a shot against the kingdom of God for having done so. But in a sense, you're like, oh, what's happening? It feels like a shock to the system. But the truth of the matter was, they were just simply saying, this is not our place. This is not us. And that's okay. We're going to go serve someplace else where we can be a part of that. Does that make sense? In other words, it doesn't always have to be something that rocks your world. The question of whether it rocks your world is the degree to which I feel like I've been rejected. I had something and now I lost it. I'm at a loss. That is what we mean by anxiety. Anxiety. Very rarely are these true rejections. They just feel like it. So in systems theory, we define anxiety as the reaction someone has to perceived threat. I'm being threatened. My livelihood's being threatened. I wanted my children to grow up in that precious, precious Sunday school, and now I feel threatened because now they won't have the gospel and they won't be Christians and they'll be awful by the time they're 30. You did that, do you mind? Did you do that? Like, if my child didn't have the Sunday school class, they're going to be in jail by the time they're 35. That's where the anxiety goes. It's a perceived threat to the system that I've sort of begun to set up. That is anxiety. Now, I will say this. I will say that the anxiety I'm trying to zero in on is what we might call latent anxiety. It's more of a feeling of being uncomfortable than it is directly fear. Because fear is actually fear of something that's known. I can put my finger on it. Latent anxiety is much more destructive because it's a nameless fear. It's a nameless anxiety. I don't really know what to do. It's more generalized. It's amorphous. And what it feels like is that I am not in control anymore. And we do not like that. So, most of this threat is happening below the surface of our lives. This is what I want to stress as well. When we begin to feel that we're threatened, it's because there's something that I'm dealing with in me. It is something that's happening in me. And that is not to diminish it. I promise you. Because that needs to be attended to. But eventually we've got to come to a place of saying, okay, Les wants me to be more an absorber of anxiety rather than a conduit of anxiety. Well, how in the world do I do that? That's a great question. Stay tuned for next week. See, you put a commercial in for next week and everybody just comes racing back. But the point is, in order to become that, we have to start by saying, this is something about me. I'm experiencing this in the unique way in which I am. How am I taking responsibility for myself? How am I taking responsibility for proper care of myself? Because very rarely is the problem really the problem. The problem is because all of us are bringing all of our U-Haul, trailers worth of baggage into church conflicts, and we are conduiting that stuff. We are passing it along and passing it along. You call it gossip, systems theory is going to call it something different. Okay? Got this great quote from one of the best books on this. If you ever want to read, Ron Richardson, called Creating a Healthier Church. He's got this wonderful quote about anxiety. He says, at its most basic level, anxiety is about the threat of the loss of who we are, ourself. As adults, we are not so physically dependent as we were when we were children, but emotionally, we may feel as though our survival depends on this and on others. The emotional equivalence of abandonment might be, for some, the feelings of being cared for, not being respected, not accepted, not listened to, not taken seriously, and so forth. At a deep level, we think we will die, perish, unless the important people in our lives provide what we think we need from them emotionally. And if we don't, we feel threatened. Our sense of self is under attack. That's a big deal. And you can recognize that you can experience that in degrees. If it's a low-lying, latent thing, you may resolve that by some simple self-care. If it's a high-level thing, you're probably going to search for someone to take that thing out on. And the system perpetuates itself. And it begins to move through. Okay? I find this so profound. So here's some questions I think that we need to ponder here. Well, let me get to those in a second. It is essential to appreciate that you and I respond to the circumstances we face from a depth of personal, emotional, and family history, which makes us perceive things in different ways. There are times in which my responses can be reasonable and proper, or they can be skewed and ungodly. But this dynamic affects the entire system of a church invariably. There's one part that's getting pulled over here as the ripples of anxiety go through the mobile, and each person on the mobile has the opportunity to respond by picking up the anxiety and passing it along, or absorbing it and not being moved by it. That's the contrast. Everybody's got a choice. And just like electricity, some people can become conductors / transformers of the current, or they can become absorbers and not pass the anxiety along through the system. All right, a couple questions to consider. Questions to ponder. I don't know why you have to say ponder. How do we recognize the latent anxiety within ourselves? This is more a hypothetical question. This is not an instruction question. Let me give you the 5 ways in which you experience anxiety. No, how, like meaning the quality of, how good are you at being aware of the times in which you are triggered? Or are you in sheer reaction mode? Okay? And usually reaction mode comes in one of 2 forms, right? Fight or flight. Either we're going to the mattresses over this thing, or I'm out of here. Those are the 2 reactions we tend to feel. And you can see how even those reactions themselves perpetuate the anxiety in the system. So how are you, in general, at recognizing that there are things going on in me that actually are causing this? Are you good at that? How well do you operate in that? Secondly, how do we more rightly judge the circumstances we perceive as a threat? Right? Like, what is this really about? Is this really about those terrible people that sit in that elder room, wherever that is, making all these decisions that come down from on high? Is that really what this is about? Or is there something inside of this that really touched a thing for you? Because if I can bring that thing, it probably is going to be received a whole lot healthier, right? Maybe I can be heard in better ways. And then finally, how do we recognize when someone else perceives our actions as a threat despite our intentions? Well, that's not what I meant. You're just crazy. That's your problem. You're insane. Do you go see a therapist for this? That's what we say. But am I able to actually look and say, that's not a threat. That's them wrestling with something they've got. So someone comes into your office and let's say they yell at you. You're in your business, and there's somebody above you. They come into your thing. They go, "Did you know you did this? And this got wrong. This got wrong." Blah, 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 blah. But they're mean spirited. They're poking at you, and you're like going, "Man, we were just joking day before yesterday." Can you ever stop at that moment and say, "Is there something going on with this person? Because this doesn't feel about me. This feels like there's something else that they're shadow boxing, that I'm suddenly basically their next target, because basically they've got anxiety inside of them, and the anxiety wants to move to the next conduit. It's looking for the next conduit. And so as soon as I can find somebody to do so and put it on, it feels like relief for the person who's anxious. But by the way, it doesn't bring any relief, does it? It actually just perpetuates. It makes the whole system struggle. All right? So all I'm trying to do on this one is to simply get you to ask this question: what is systems theory? How are my relationships interdependent? And what am I bringing to the table? Because this is the perspective I think that is rare when conflicts really get up there. Man, I really thought I had more time for questions, but I'll say 4 minutes. Any thoughts or clarification questions about what we mean? Your first exposure to this is always like, what? Next week, hopefully, it'll become a little more clear, I hope. Yes, here's a question. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so the question was about, we've seen churches that have split. Maybe we've been a part of them ourselves. Maybe we just read about them in books or popular media. The question is, how best should leadership respond in order to keep these systems from crumbling from within themselves? That's exactly next week's topic, but let me give you a preview. The answer is by making sure that we do not become people that are pure conduits of the anxiety. Because let's be honest, the anxiety the congregation may feel as that rises up to the level of leadership, if they continue to perpetuate that thing, even in the midst of our meetings themselves, we'll pass that thing along and begin the seeds of destruction. And you want to believe that, like, no, there's a bunch of calm-headed men that are sitting in a room and they're praying over every decision that they make, and it's peaceful and lovely. Yeah, you believe that. The temptations for leadership to give in to the same anxiety that their people are feeling are everywhere. Now, it may be that somebody in the midst of that whole thing realizes, actually, this is my issue. I'm going to bow to this issue. I don't need to be a part of that. But eventually what has to happen is every leader has to go through a process of knowing whether or not they are healthy themselves. This is a huge deal. Because if the leader is not healthy, and I'm going to be very specific about healthy. Healthy simply means that you've got healthy places for you to take your anxiety, and therefore you can become someone who can manage other people's anxiety. That as you start to get these, you know, curveballs thrown at you of, whoa, my goodness, the lightning hit the building. I can't believe it. Are you managing that yourself well? And you realize that's a moving target, by the way, depending on the issue. Because you may have one leader who sails through something like a building program, being like, whatever, cool, this is awesome, love it. But then suddenly you get to something that really gets under his skin, and you're like, whoa, what is this about? Well, it's about his baggage is what it is. And that's not just for the pastor. That's for the leaders, that's for the deacons, that's for the people that take ownership over small groups. It's going to come down to asking the question, are you a healthy person? Is that leader a healthy person? And there's a whole long list of ways in which we know how we become healthy. And there I got to be an absorber. And by the way, small thing to help you pray for your leaders. When I have to become an absorber of anxiety, that means I'm also being threatened. And that means that you're going to suffer. There will be no leader of an organization that is healthy that will not suffer themselves. Because if you're going to say, I'm going to let the buck stop here, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt you. And that's why you need to pray for your leaders and for your elders and for your deacons and for all those people that are in charge of anything that they run. Because the temptation is always pulling. And again, you give me enough unhealth and you're going to get unhealth from me. Because we're all a system. We're all connected. You follow? And so you also need to be concerned. It sounds like I'm talking about me. I'm really not. I've got this all down pat. that's really what that sounded like, didn't it? But it really is true. This is about Ginger and me, right? Am I bringing my stuff from home here to work? And vice versa. Good night. Yeah, usually it's the other way around. I'm dragging home work to home. But the question is like, is he healthy? Does he have what he needs? That's a question. Are the elders healthy? Do they have what they need? that maybe rather than sort of starting a petition, I don't know, maybe I'll go to the session meeting, which are all wide open, by the way. Any member of Christ Prayers can request to come visit with the session. Y'all know this, right? Hopefully the inquirers class covered this. You can come and sit and ask a question. Maybe that's a healthier way to help resolve conflict, to deal with disagreements. But healthy ways, that's all next week's topic. So, great question. Now I'm out of time. I get kind of engaged on this topic, so y'all bear with me. It's overly excitable. Poor Ginger has to live with all the... Just wait until next week I uncork this phrase, to be a self-differentiated, non-anxious presence. You're going to love that. It's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. Let me pray for us and we'll finish out. Lord Jesus, then give us grace to manage well, to navigate well, to be wise as serpents but innocent as doves. And in the process, we would grow as your body, that we would be healthy. We can't stop lightning strikes from hitting the building. We can't stop pastors who've been here for 20 years from taking other calls. We can't stop mistakes that leadership makes where they bungle through things wrongly and without wisdom. We can't stop that. But you can empower your people by your Spirit to be healthy, to have relationships for themselves where they discharge that anxiety in healthy ways instead of unhealthy ways. Father, you can equip us with that. And so we pray that you would lead us through that. And in the end, people would look back and be helped and healed because of this church's ministry in this community. Would you do that? We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.